Are you ready for the entertainment experience of a lifetime? Knockdown, Dragout, hard-hitting conversations, debates, and interviews. Well, if you said yes to any of these questions, sit back, relax, and enjoy something like no other. This is the Isolation Series Podcast, presented by the Scott Robles team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, by WellbeingsPerformance.com for all your online meeting needs, by Barbarian Steakhouse, Canada's premier upscale restaurant. For more information, go to Barbarians.com. By ImprintPilates.com Toronto and the Greater Toronto Area's premier Pilates studio. And by the Toronto Immune and Digestive Health Institute. For more information, go to TIDHI.ca. Here now is your host, Spencer Miller.
Hey guys, and welcome to another edition of the Isolation Series. Me, Spencer Miller. Very pleased to be joined, as always, by my partner in crime in this little thing we like to refer to as the Isolation Series, Paul Shields. And it is Tuesday, April 18th, 2023. And before we jump into today's program, here on the Isolation Series, Paul and I like to use this platform and make statements when we feel like it is needed and or warranted. And I just wanted to take a moment before we dive into the sports side of things to send my best out to that 16-year-old Ralph Yarrow, who is currently in ICU fighting for his life after a horrific, horrific situation went down just a couple of days ago. You know, far too often all around the world, we see incidences like this for one reason or another. And this kid is a 16-year-old kid, had a bright future ahead of him, had his whole life still ahead of him. And now seemingly it's going to be a long, long road to try and get back to any semblance of what he knew just a couple of days ago. So I wanted to just take a moment and say I'm sending my best to him and his family and the whole legal team and everything else like that. I don't know if you have any thoughts on it per se, Paul, but I know that we here on the Isolation Series, like I said, like to mention things like this whenever we see it appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly have lots of thoughts on it, but I think the overwhelming feeling I have initially is care for him and his family and the hope that he is able to recover and move on from a horrible incident that it is. I have so much to say as far as, you know, this, there's this building of a culture of fear mixed with this idea that guns somehow equate to freedom in many parts of, you know, the U.S. in particular, as we see gun violence seem to be ramping up as opposed to slowing down. And I just think it's a horrible cocktail for events like this one. And, you know, then you pile on the added layers of social injustice or racial injustice, systematic oppression, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just this horrifying cocktail of danger and violence. And it's scary and upsetting that we have to continue to have conversations like this when the answer seems very clear. I feel
Paul,
for him and his family, and I wish him nothing but a speedy recovery back to full health.
Yeah, and just to piggyback off of that, like, the fact that they're saying that the individual that did this to this kid felt threatened, that is just ludicrous to me in this particular circumstance, in terms of the fact that by all indications and everything that we know, he was just trying to look for his younger siblings and do his elderly brother duties by collecting the rest of his family and different things like that. and he was just knocking to see where they were because he couldn't keep track and whatnot. And then whether it is race motivated, whether it is a bit of hate motivated, whether it is whatever it is, a whole cocktail, as you said, motivated that this individual did this, like for him to say that he felt threatened. The kid didn't even enter your house. He was on your porch just looking for his family. And that was your first instinct. It is absolutely reprehensible on every level. And you and I have talked about this many, many times already on the program before about, you know, guns and that whole thing and whatnot. And it just makes me sad. For a lot of different reasons, many of which you already mentioned, but it also makes me sad for the responsible gun owner in terms of the fact that, like, there is still something called hunting. There is still a lot of people in the United States and around the world and in Saskatchewan and different things like that that like to go hunting and do it safely and own their stuff safely. And anytime that this situation happens, it's a continual black mark, and rightfully so. But again, it makes me feel kind of bad for those individuals who just want to go and hunt and enjoy the whole situation of hunting and the whole act of hunting, because they are frowned upon every time a situation like this happens, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I just feel like we're talking about two totally separate things. You know, I think a responsible gun owner understands the need for certain regulations and certain rules to come along with owning a weapon, right? And, you know, we all, any one of us who wants to drive a vehicle in the North America, in Canada for sure, has to go through a process of proving that when you are behind the wheel of that vehicle, you are going to be safe, right? Because you, by many accounts, have control now of a weapon, right? And I think that there's a difference between using a gun as a weapon and using a gun as a tool, right? Those who hunt and game and things like that, that's a tool. It's a tool of their trade. Now, I have zero interest in hunting. I will never shoot a gun in my entire lifetime. I have no need for it. I have no use for it. I have no time for it. But that's me. And that's not to, you know, I just don't see the enjoyment in hunting and killing anything, whether it's, you know, whether it's game or not. That's just not my vibe. But, as a hunter, you agree to hunt at a certain time of season, you agree to a set of rules when you're hunting, you agree to a way of doing this that is approved by those who regulate these things. I think that, you know, like I mentioned earlier, and I don't want to give it a ton of airtime because it's just depressing, to be perfectly honest, but we have created a cocktail of fear and freedom. Somehow, gun ownership has gotten tied into the idea of, you know, of freedom, of the ability to live a free life in the United States. And I, you know, it's politicians on both sides, lobbyists, you know, powerful people in the United States have used things like this for political and personal gain for too long and have played a very dangerous game. And we are seeing the continued results of that game. And I'm not putting this on one side over the other. This is not a red versus blue. This is not, you know, this is not a political statement. This is simply a human being who is so tired of seeing people die because we have wrapped up fear and freedom into owning guns. And, you know, it's just sad, and it's a horrible thing that's happened, and I wish that we didn't have to talk about it as much as we do.
Right. Switching gears, and it's not an easy transition, but we're also here to talk about sports. Switching gears, I want to talk to you now, if we can, about night one of the NHL playoffs. We talked about the matchups and gave our predictions of what we thought the series were going to be. It was an entertaining night one, to say the least. I want to get your thoughts first and foremost on the Edmonton-LA game, because that was a back-and-forth affair, which ended in overtime. First of all, did you get a chance to see any of it at all, or was it a little too late for you?
I watched the game, but I'm not sure where it was back and forth. It was Edmonton absolutely dominating 90% of that game, if not 95% of that game. And then, unfortunately, being a little bit undisciplined in some really important moments. In that last moment, first of all, Adrian Kempe, I don't think gets enough love. He probably doesn't land on the radar of some of, you know, the Eastern media, as far as the Eastern time zone media. We're very focused on the Eastern Conference, being that we're in the Toronto area, being that we're Leaf fans. But that's a player that's really talented, and he showed what he is to that Kings team, right? You could see Edmonton, who is just massive. Like, that team, I think people underestimate just how big and fast the Oilers are. Their objective was hit Kempe and make him earn it. And last night he earned it. But the Oilers were in control of that game. Unfortunately, Evan Bouchard takes a pretty... I see what he was going for in the final minute there, but his stick is too high and he cross-checks the guy in the head. That's a penalty. And I hate to say it, because I want the Oilers to win.
Every day of the week, too, there was no question.
That's one that, as a referee, you can't really ignore. So, okay, LA ties it with, 16 seconds left or whatever it was. You've still dominated this game. You still have a chance. And then in overtime, you could argue that it was a light call. I understand that argument. I understand the frustrations of the fan in the building. But I also don't understand what that player is doing there. And I don't want to get the player wrong. I forget who it was. But he gets knocked down. And instead of, getting his stick under him and getting back up and immediately getting back in the play, he's reaching for a player who is already well past him. He is outstretched entirely for a play that there's no hope of him making. So instead of hitting the puck, he gets his stick caught in the person's feet and the guy goes down and the ref calls a tripping penalty. Then, and the Kings are able to seal it in overtime on the power play. So I think that as the Oilers look back at game one, there's a lot of things to like about that. You're not going to be able to keep McDavid off the score sheet. I don't even think for another game, let alone this series. He was absolutely dynamic, as he always is. That there's a play, I believe it was in the first period, where he literally comes out of a pack of three Kings. He emerges with two of them on his back. And almost scores.
It was the first period with 7 minutes and 32 seconds left, to be exact.
Great. I love to be exact, Spence? But the idea being that he's going to get those chances. They just simply cannot stop him long enough. They had no answer for Leon Draisaitl last night. He was excellent in a two-goal performance. So if I'm the Kings, if I'm the Oilers, I think I leave this game feeling pretty good about, 55 minutes of work, right? There's 5 minutes that they need to clean up. So I pick the Oilers in seven. I still think it's going to be a long series, but I think there's a lot to like about that game. So if you're an Oilers fan, just a disappointing ending.
I also want to get your thoughts on another very interesting game from night one, in my opinion, and that is the Minnesota Wild and Dallas Stars. They went pretty well, even for the majority of the game, with spurts on either side where they looked like they were going to take it over, ultimately resulting in two overtimes, not just one overtime, two overtimes, with the Minnesota Wild prevailing in game one, 3-2. Did you get a chance to see any of these highlights at all? And what were your thoughts on particular
contest? I watch as much as I can in the playoffs, so I'm usually pretty tuned in. I was flipping back and forth. I was surprised they made it out of that first overtime. I thought the Stars had some nice chances, and I thought Gustafson played very well. But again, like, this is another series that I picked to go seven. You also picked it to go seven. So it's tough to lose game one at home, but I think this is going to be a long, long series. And if yesterday's game is any indication, we're in for a good one. There's probably a little more exciting than I thought it would be. I thought these two teams would sort of grind each other into dust. But there were some exciting moments. The overtime was quite good. So yeah, I'm surprised the Wild pulled it out, but I think I still stick with the thought that it's going to be a long series and this one's going seven.
Do you have any thoughts particularly on game one of the Islanders, Carolina, and the Panthers in Boston? Both the Hurricanes and the Bruins ended up coming out on top in game one for their series respectively yesterday.
Hurricane Islanders was kind of exactly what I expected. Pretty low event hockey, pretty hard hitting, good defensive structure on both sides. I thought Antti Raanta played great for the Hurricanes. And so, if not for Sorokin, I think that game would have been a little more lopsided. As far as the Bruins Panthers goes, it looked the way that I expected it to look. You know, Alex Lyon, I feel for him today. Played really well to keep that game within reach, but let in a pretty nasty goal that put the Panthers down. A Brad Marchand goal that appears to go like a nothing wrister that appears to go right through his glove. That's a tough one when you kind of have to play perfect hockey if you're the Panthers to even have a chance in this series. But yeah, I would say those two games were more of what I would have expected to see.
I don't like agreeing with you here on the isolation series, but I completely agree with you in that perspective that they are who we thought they were, to quote the old coach Denny Green back in the day, for both of those series, at least right out the gate. Now I'm going to switch it over to you now to continue our predictions for the series that start tonight. So over to you, my friend.
Okay, so I'm going to do this the same way we did it yesterday. We have all the times in Eastern time, but the first puck to drop tonight will be 7 p.m. Eastern, between the Rangers and the Devils. The Rangers finishing, I guess it's Rangers at Devils. So Devils finishing second in the Met and the Rangers finishing third. I like the changes that the Rangers made at the deadline. I thought they really went for it and added to an already dynamic team. I love the goaltending in Sezjerkin, and I love the fact that they've got Norris Trophy winner, Adam Fox on the back end. I feel like the Rangers have an advantage here, but I think the Devils could be dangerous because they are playing with house money. This is a team that improved greatly over last season. Were excellent, had a shot at the tops in the Met right down to the very end of the season. But I think this one's close. Spence, I'm going to let you pick first and then I'm going to give mine. Who do you got and why?
I got the Rangers in seven games. I just think it's going to be an even series, just going across the river from Madison Square Garden to the Prudential Center, which is only about a 20-minute drive in New York traffic at the best of times. But that's not why I think it's going seven. I just think that they are well matched all around. I do think, however, the goaltending edge does go to Shesterkin and the Rangers just because he's proven to be that guy over the last couple of years. We'll see if he can carry it through the playoffs this year. But the only thing that gives me pause is how great the Devils have looked at different times of the season. And I know the regular season is much different than the playoffs. Just ask us Maple Leaf fans for the last 19 years. We have to remember that the New Jersey Devils had a 14-game winning streak at one point, and things like that. So, yes, they are playing with house money. You're absolutely correct. But they do have a lot of young, talented people on their roster currently. Their coach has got them to buy into the system in an appropriate way. So I do think that it's going to be really close, like I've said three times already, but I am picking the Rangers in seven.
Yeah, I also have the Rangers in seven. I think what's going to give the Rangers the most trouble is just the speed of the Devils. They play at a pace that is hard to match for pretty much any team in the league. Like, they are among the fastest teams, and their system plays into that speed. And then you add the next Hughes brother on the back end, who might be their fastest defenseman. So a fast team got faster. But all that said, I do think that Shesterkin will help to make the difference and settle down a Rangers team that is lethal when given opportunities. And I think that sometimes with the pace that the Devils play at, they can make some of those errors in transition. And I think that the Rangers are a team that can exploit that. I also have the Rangers in seven, but I think this is going to be a heck of a series. And I heard this on, I believe it was the Steve Dangle podcast. They were talking about there might not be a series where the two fan bases hate each other as much as the Rangers and Devils fans, you know, go at one another. So I think that that's going to add another element. I think both of these buildings are going to be absolutely rocking for every game. So I'm really looking forward to this series. I think it's a long one.
Do you think we are going to see the return of one of the most infamous Devils fans during this series, who is from Seinfeld from back in the day, but most recently came back as the Enterprise rent-a-car guy in their commercials and whatnot? I forget his name as an actor and whatnot, but I'm pretty sure you know who I'm talking about. Do you think
played David Putty in Seinfeld. I forget the actor's name, but he's a funny man, and he did the painted face bit in Seinfeld. Very funny. I think it'd be a great idea for the Devils to bring him in. It's a very iconic pop culture moment, and very fun, and a little bit of a 6 degrees of isolation series separation with the Devils. My pals in the band Silverstein actually, their music has been played. I can't remember if it's their goal song or their pump up song, but each Devils games, one of the newer songs off of their most recent release, is their pump up song. It's called Ultraviolet. You can get it wherever you get your music. Check it out. But kind of a fun tie into the Devils hockey, because they're also hockey fans, and they got to enjoy a home game this year with their tune blaring for all to hear. So very exciting.
Maybe for
I'm gonna next keep us moving along. Oh, go ahead.
Maybe for next year's song, they need to break out Simpleton.
Oh man, I have to blow the dust off those records, Spence. Okay, so the next puck to drop tonight is the series that's closest to our heart here on the Isolation Series at 7:30 Eastern. We will see game one between the Maple Leafs, who finished second in the Atlantic, taking on the Lightning, who finished third. You know, a repeat series from last year. Last year, the margins were razor thin, literally one goal decided the last game on a controversial call that didn't go the Leafs' way. And here we are again. You know, the Leafs are at it again. I do think that the Lightning are starting to show the wear and tear that three Stanley Cup runs in a row and two victories can do to a team. I feel like John Cooper has been trying to push different buttons this year, you know, benching the Stars for nearly an entire period near the end of the season. Some of the things that he's mentioned to the media, some of the mind games that he was even playing in that last game versus the Leafs. It just feels a little different this year for the Lightning. As the Leafs go in, it looks like the Leafs have added to, obviously a very talented core, again, a top five team in the league. Their second best total in points next to last season. You know, adding great depth in forward and some rugged performers on the blue line. I don't know. It feels different, Spence, but what do you think?
I'm so glad you asked, because I'm going to take a sip from the proverbial goblet of one Paul Shields as far as positivity goes right now here on the Isolation Series, and say that after 19 agonizing seasons, the Leafs get out of the first round. And they get out of the first round in six games.
So we are 2 for 2 tonight, Spence, in adding. I think, so here's the hockey fan in me thinks that, you know, Tampa has not played well for a long time now, right? Since the beginning of March, they've been trending in the wrong direction. Now, I understand that it is a fool who bets against Tampa Bay. So I do think that they are, I don't think they're just going, I don't think they just forgot how to play hockey, and they have maybe the ultimate difference maker in Andrei Vasilevskiy. But Vasilevskiy, I think, is the only clear advantage that Tampa Bay has. I think the Leafs have deeper defensemen. I think the Leafs have deeper forward group. And I also think the Leafs are going to finish this in six. If I was an alien that was dropped onto this planet and only watched this season of hockey, I might have said the Leafs in five. But because I am a scarred Maple Leafs fan who is carrying around the baggage of, you know, nearly 40 years of this team being not very good or not very timely in when they are good, I have to say six so that the Leafs can win a series, but my heart doesn't have to handle another game seven in round one.
Can I ask you, have we ever gone 2 for 2 on anything?
Oh, I don't know. I'm sure. I'm sure there have been certain takes where we've been similar. I don't know. So far, what did we agreed on 2 series yesterday, and we disagreed on 2. And so right now we agree on 2, but we got 2 more to go. So as of now, we're tracking a little different than yesterday, but we will continue on with the next puck to drop tonight. It is 9:30 p.m. Eastern. We are looking at the Winnipeg Jets, who snuck into wildcard number 2 and the final playoff spot in the West, taking on the Vegas Golden Knights, who finished tops in the West. Golden Knights, looks like Mark Stone is going to be ready for game one. Looks like that back injury is going to be manageable throughout the playoffs. Not necessarily who's sure who's starting in net for the Golden Knights, but that has been no barrier to them at all this season. They have trotted out, I believe, 4 or 5 different goalies, with Robin Lehner out for the entire season with hip issues. You're talking Jonathan Quick, you're talking Logan Thompson, we're talking Laurent Boisois, Aiden Hill, among others. But the Golden Knights just seem to keep winning. On the flip side, the Jets have Connor Hellebuck, who is one of the best goalies in the game. It looks like for the last couple weeks of the season, they started to figure it out, and they managed to edge out a Calgary team that was terrible and a Nashville team that sold at the deadline. I haven't picked a whole lot of underdogs in these playoffs, and I'm having a hard time picking this underdog. What do you think, Spence?
I'm picking the Golden Knights for the simple fact that there has not been a team this season in the NHL that has been more Jekyll and Hyde than the Winnipeg Jets. And to be clear, I've mentioned it here on the program more than once that I love Connor Hellebuck. I love Connor Hellebuck's game, but you cannot rely singularly on an outstanding goaltender for the playoffs. Yes, if you get a hot goaltender, it really helps you in the playoffs go on a run. We know that from 2002 with Cam Ward and the Carolina Hurricanes at that particular time. But I think that the Golden Knights just have too many weapons and feel way more confident going into this matchup than the Winnipeg Jets, because the Winnipeg Jets, hour to hour, day to day, don't know who's going to show up.
Excellent. How many games you got Vegas winning in, Spence?
Oh, right. I forgot that. Sorry about that. Five.
Okay. So we agree on the team. I do think that Hellebuck and the Jets are going to take a couple games away from Vegas. So I have Vegas in 6. I think that Vegas is almost being a little bit forgotten. Right. You know, we gushed about the Oilers and we gushed about the Kings and we've talked about how good the Stars are, but the Golden Knights were better than all of them, right? Golden Knights in the standings beat all of them, and they did it with, you know, like pick a goalie out of the hat all year. So I think Bruce Cassidy's done a great job in his first year coaching there. I think we're seeing more of what we would have expected to see out of Jack Eichel, right? Last year was tough coming off the back surgery that he had, and the trade and everything that happened with Buffalo. So I think we're seeing the Golden Knights team round into a form now that is going to be hard to beat. And I don't trust one or two good weeks from the Winnipeg Jets to say that they're going to be able to overcome Vegas. So while I think they're going to win a couple games, I think it's going to be a closer series than maybe it looked like it might have been a month ago when we didn't know if the Jets were even going to make the playoffs. I do still think that Vegas is going to take it.
Okay.
So last but certainly not least, we have the 10 p.m. puck drop tonight with the Stanley Cup, defending Stanley Cup champion Colorado Avalanche taking on the very surprising Seattle Kraken. Seattle had a 40-point swing from last year, the biggest swing in NHL history to go from one of the bottom feeder teams in their expansion year to a playoff team in year two. I love this story. The Avalanche are struggling as far as injuries. We know that Gabe Landeskog's not going to play this year. The Kraken have a ton of motivation, a ton of, you know, chip on their shoulder, giving off some of those Vegas vibes from year one of Vegas. But I ultimately think that Colorado has the advantage here. I ultimately think that Colorado is the better team. And I think the Avs take care of business pretty tidily in this series. And I'm saying Avs in five. Spence, where are you at?
I'm going to say something I've never said on the isolation series. And that is release the Kraken. Yes, release the Kraken. I do believe that Colorado is a big game team. They are the defending Stanley Cup champions, but we know how difficult it is, unless you are the Tampa Bay Lightning, to repeat as champions and or make it back to the Stanley Cup Finals in back-to-back years, let alone three consecutive years. And I just like the vibe that they have going in Seattle right now. I believe that that fan base is just going to go off with it being their first playoff real opportunity to get behind their team, like we did see in year one in Vegas, like you mentioned. And I believe that they are going to be the surprise of round one and the Cinderella of round one, other than our Toronto Maple Leafs. And I'm saying it is going to be Seattle, obviously, and the Kraken will be released in seven games.
Okay. Awesome. So I think that it could be a really cool story if Grubauer can go in there and just be amazing. Right? Tough year last year after signing the big contract and leaving Colorado. Colorado goes on to win the cup. Grubauer has a tough start to this year. He sort of loses that starting job a little bit for periods of time, but has really come on nicely over the last couple months. I think it's going to be a good series, but yeah, it's interesting that's your underdog. I think it's a pretty good one to pick, Spence. And, to steal a line from Spencer Miller, only time will tell, my friend.
Well, thank you very much. And I loved saying release the Kraken. So hopefully it'll be a good omen. A couple of things before we end this Tuesday, April 18th edition of the Isolation Series. I quickly want to get your thoughts, if I can, on a story that's developing in the NBA right now in the first round of the playoffs. And that is the Sacramento Kings have made a surprising run themselves to the first round of the playoffs for the first time since 2006, which is 17 years. And not only were they game for the series against the Warriors in game one when it came down to a final shot, seemingly between Andrew Wiggins and then ultimately Steph Curry, and the Warriors came up short there, but then in game two, last night, Sacramento also took care of business, with Domantas Sabonis having more of an offensive presence than he did in game one, even though he did collect 16 rebounds in game one to help them to that margin of victory. And I just want to get your thoughts, because for the first time in the Steph Curry era, the Warriors are down 0-2 in any series.
Yeah, I wouldn't be super concerned if I was Golden State, I think they've been there, done that. You know, there are, this is a team that's battle tested, won many championships. There's a lot of pedigree there. So I don't know that I'm super concerned losing a couple games on the road. I think that, you know, there's a lot of experience there, and if they can bounce back and win a couple at home, then it's a brand new series. Right. I do think it's surprising. I think that, you know, Sacramento being in the playoffs was maybe a bit of a surprise, and the way that they've been able to handle that pressure of playing the defending champs has been impressive. So all credit to Sacramento, but I'm not counting Golden State out just yet. I think that there's still a lot of series to go, and you're playing a team that's won a lot, right? And when you win a lot, you know how to make adjustments. They've got good coaching. They've got good players. So it wouldn't surprise me to see them rattle off a couple wins here and bring this series back to even.
Okay. And what are your thoughts at all on Philadelphia? They beat Brooklyn in game one by 20 points, and they followed that up with a 12-point victory in game two. Do you believe that Philadelphia will now sweep Brooklyn, or will Brooklyn push it to a game five by sneaking out at least one victory in this series?
I think Brooklyn is a good team, not a great team. You know, the 76ers might be a great team. Certainly Joel Embiid is an MVP candidate. He's been excellent this season. So I would expect the Sixers to win handily. I don't know. Sweeps are hard, right? Even like, I mean, we see sweeps in the NBA at times, but you know, it's the hardest time of year to play. You've got a lot of players on that Brooklyn team who are playing with pride. You know, they want to show the world that it wasn't, you know, KD and Kyrie was the only reason that they were any good. I'm sure that there's a little bit of that sort of, you know, chip on their shoulder. So I don't think they're going to go quietly, but I don't see this being a long series. I think if it gets to six games, that'll be a surprise, as I think the Nets are going to run out of gas pretty quick in this one.
Now, subsequently, another series that intrigues me is the LA Clippers and the Phoenix Suns. The LA Clippers ended up winning 115-110 in game one off the back of playoff Kawhi without playoff P. Playoff Kawhi did what Kawhi normally does in big games. He dropped 38 points in that 5-point victory. But Phoenix has proven to be a good, strong team again this year. They have shown some cracks going down the stretch because, once again, Kevin Durant hasn't been able to stay on the basketball court for any length of time. But we know that when he is in the lineup, even in that game one loss where he didn't get much of the ball thrown to him, seemingly in the fourth quarter, he still dropped 27 points and whatnot. So what are you anticipating out of game two tonight between the Clippers and the Phoenix Suns?
Yeah, this is a series that I think is going to go a long time. I think this will be six or seven games easy. I saw a wild stat that KD is 1-9 in his last 10 playoff games, which is just crazy to me. Like, he's so good that, and it just shows you sort of how tough it's been for him in the last handful of seasons with the Nets, with that Nets team and whatnot. But I think the Suns are going to bounce back. I think that you're going to see a split here in the first two games. I wouldn't be surprised if you see another split in the next two games. I think these teams are just really evenly matched. And as Kawhi went off and did what Kawhi does in the playoffs, which is play incredibly well, tonight's game, we could easily see Durant go off and have a game, or Booker go off and have a game just like that. So I think adjustments will be made. I would hunker down for a long series between these two teams.
Yes, and just as a side note and side storyline, how bad would it be and how bad would you feel for somebody like Chris Paul if he is still not able to get his elusive championship after getting Kevin Durant. Now, there's still a long way to go in this series, like we both predict, but I would just feel awful for him because he has been the consummate professional and has done everything right seemingly in his career, and they should have won, if not last year, the year before, but they came up short for one reason or another, and you go out and do the blockbuster trade of Kevin Durant, and if you're still not able to get Chris Paul his championship, I would feel bad for that guy.
Yeah, I mean, you feel bad for a player who plays that well for that long to not win a championship, but he certainly wouldn't be alone. There's a long, long list of really great players who never saw a championship. So I don't feel any more bad for him than I would feel for any other player. And I actually probably don't feel as bad for him as I would for a player that I was emotionally attached to. I think Chris Paul's a very good player. He's just never happened to play for a team that I would consider to be my favorite. So it would suck for him. That's crappy. Yeah, I agree.
Well, thank you for that. And then last but certainly not least, here on today's episode of the Isolation Series, we started with that deplorable situation off the top of the program. So I wanted to put a nice uplifting button on today's episode and say that Damar Hamlin, who collapsed famously at the end of the regular season heading into the playoffs, that plays safety for the Buffalo Bills, was officially cleared this morning to resume his NFL career, and he will be joining his Buffalo Bills teammates, if not later today, tomorrow, for off-season workouts. So that is some unbelievable great news, especially coming off of the pictures that all of us witnessed on the evening of January 2nd, 2023.
Yeah, that's some excellent news. You know, that was a scary moment for the sporting world, never mind just, you know, football fans. I think everybody in the sports world was watching, you know, with the proverbial bated breath. And it's a great, that's a great story that he's going to be able to continue at that level, you know, because I think in moments like that, the first thing you're concerned about is, can the person live a normal life? Right. And the fact that he's been able to recover to the point where not only is he able to live a normal life, but he's able to live an extraordinary one where he gets to continue to be a pro athlete is something worth celebrating and worth talking about. So excellent way to end the podcast, Spence. Congratulations to him. And all the best to him as he gets ready for the NFL season, which, you know, really isn't that far away. So be great to see him back on the field.
Please don't talk to me about that because, you know, here in the Southern Ontario area, we got treated to some summer-like weather for the vast majority of the last week. And now it's back to being somewhat, you know, normal spring temperatures for the next few days. But looking forward to experiencing some summer-like weather in the not-too-distant future. And although we love the NFL season here on the Isolation Series, by the time the NFL season comes around, that means that the summer is coming to an end and the shitty weather is around the corner again. So don't rush it, please, and thank you, Paul.
I'm not rushing it. I'm just letting, you know, obviously Damar Hamlin's going to be listening to this, and I just want to let him know he's got some work to do.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Great way to end today's Tuesday edition of the Isolation Series. We hope you enjoyed listening and or watching wherever it is that you were doing so. And we want to send a big thank you out to everybody that tunes in to the program, as well as our fantastic sponsors, without whom we wouldn't be able to do this as often as we do. But for Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller. This has been another edition of the Isolation Series, and we look forward to coming at you again with another edition tomorrow. Bye-bye. And Paul, please tell people all about some more whole grain goodness that is us.
Folks, be sure to check us out on podbean.com by going to theisolationseries.podbean.com. There you'll find the audio-only versions of the podcast, including all of our past amazing interviews. One more time, that's theisolationseries.podbean.com. And hey, don't forget to follow us on Instagram. It's at @thespencermiller and at Pauly Shields, Pauly spelled P-A-W-L-Y. So find us on podbean.com, follow us on Instagram, and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.
And once again, everybody, thank you for watching and or listening and supporting this thing we like to call the Isolation Series. For Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller, and we will see you again very, very soon. Bye-bye.